tells me he's going to arrive, it falls to me to start the meeting. Okay? So, just to go through the basics, what we have to do is regarding emergency evacuation procedures. I think everybody knows them, but just to say that there's two emergency exits, one at the back of the room, and one in the corner here, and the toilets and drinks machines are outside, as you know. So item two, apologies for absence. I've only one apology for absence, and that's Jim Bailey. And have you got that? Sorry. Janet Sanderson won't be joining us again. She has resigned from the committee. Okay. And seeing as it's close... Pardon? I can't comment on that. and she won't be replaced because until after the elections. Okay, so we're down one.
Chair, we've had apologies from Councillor Joy Andrews as well.
Oh, Joy Andrews. Okay, right. So just right. Item three, minutes of the meeting held on the 22nd of November, which I hope you've all had a chance to look at. I will propose those. Can I have a seconder, please? Yes, okay. Thanks. Is that all in favour? There's not many there, is there? Okay, right. We'll take them as read as acceptable then. Okay? So we come now to urgent business. To my knowledge, there's no urgent business. And if John comes with some urgent business, I shall say we've passed that point now. So see what reaction we get. Declarations of interest from any members on the act. On any of the items? No? Okay. Chairman's announcement. Well, I've just announced that Janet Sanderson has resigned from the committee, so I have nothing else to add to that. And I don't know of any other announcements that John wanted to make. So we come to the meat of the agenda tonight, which is item seven, which is a Treasury Management Statement and Investment Strategy, and I will pass that over to Anton to just briefly outline the detail. Thank you. Anton?
Thank you, Chair. So this is the draft of the annual Treasury Management Strategy and Annual Investment Strategy for the next financial year. Actually, at the last committee meeting, we went through the progress on last year's one. So very similar in format. A couple of things just to point out. We are required under, new guidelines, regulations, to complete a capital strategy. That's also included as part of this, so it's a lengthy document. But it really, I'm sure people are aware, our Treasury Management Strategy is to ensure that we are managing things like our cash flow properly, that we're funding our debt and any capital program properly, and that we are aware of some of the bigger issues that might impact on the council. And that's why you see things like the various ratings for countries across the world. So that's the interesting part of the Treasury Management Strategy. But it's an important document. The other thing I'll point out is at the last meeting we were asked to consider whether we would look into investing in credit unions. There is a note to say that we will look at that at the request of this panel, of this committee rather, and we'll do that as part of our capital expenditure plan. So that's still around. Happy to take any questions if you have them, but we're looking for your approval of this, and then this will go on to council to approve when we go through the budget, and of course that includes the capital plan. Okay, thank you.
Has anybody any questions? I'll take it by the deadly silence there isn't any. So can I wish you were, yes? Okay, so can I put it to the vote then, please, that the report be accepted? Right, that's unanimous, or that's carried by the people that are here. Okay, so we're going to item eight. External audit plan for 2018, which will be presented by... Sorry, I forgot your name now.
It's Gareth.
Gareth, yeah. Yes, that's right. And as you know, we now have a new external auditors now, which is Grant Thornton, so this is their first... presentation of an audit plan, is that correct?
It is indeed, Chair. Yeah, so this is our first audit plan for Rydale. It sets out our work for the 18-19 financial year. I'll take the plan as read, but I'll just talk the committee through some of the key highlights in section one or page three of the plan. So in terms of significant risks that our audit will focus on, we've listed three there in the bullets, which are around management overrider control. So these are those areas where management are making key estimates and judgments in your accounts, which will be a key area of focus for us, and also a review of sort of journal entries. There's a big push to review and test and audit journal entries because within the audit regulatory market, you know, they're typically seen as areas where you know, financial reporting manipulation can take place. So there'll be a big review around journals. And then the other two areas are really around the sort of high-value balances on the council's balance sheet in respect of your pension fund liability and the valuation of your land and buildings or property, plant and equipment or fixed assets, as they used to be referred to. And again, these are areas with a high value and a high level of assumptions and can be subject to key fluctuations. So our work on the audit will take place in the summer, and our summary findings on those three points will be included in the ISA 260 report, which will come to this committee towards the end of July. We've got our materiality level there, which is broadly consistent with our predecessors as external auditors. And in essence, what that means is that any sort of adjustments or amendments that we highlight as part of our audit process over and above £20,000, we will include in our ISA 260 report to this committee in July. There is a slightly lower level of materiality, which we've touched on later on in the report, in respect of the remuneration report for senior officers. So we work to a lower level of materiality for that disclosure of £5,000, given the sensitivity around that note. We also, in addition to the work on the accounts, we also do a value for money arrangements review, and we've highlighted a key risk there that we'll be doing some work around in respect of the risk management arrangements in place at the council. That builds on the issues highlighted in last year's annual governance statement, issues that have come to light through previous work of internal audit in that area, and indeed issues that have arisen from the numerous introductory meetings that we've had with senior management since our appointment back in the autumn. So again, We'll be doing some work on that and reporting back our findings in July. Our audit fee is also quoted on that summary page as well, Chair, and again, that's in line with the audit fee letter that we presented to this committee back in October. So this is the first year of the new audit scale fees following the significant local government tender round that took place last year, and obviously it represents a saving from what you've paid in the past. So that was all I was proposing to say on the plan, Chair, but obviously happy to take any questions, and myself and Talina will try and endeavour to answer them.
Has anybody got any questions appertaining to what's just been said in the report? Yes, certainly, Charlie. Sorry.
Can I ask about this valuation of land and buildings? I thought we'd had it all assessed last year, our portfolio of buildings and land.
Happy to deal with that one. So undoubtedly that you as a council will have done a valuation review to inform your prior year valuation in last year's accounts. But under the accounting standards, there's a requirement to ensure that the value of your land and buildings as at the 31st of March 19 is still a materially accurate valuation. And the only way really to demonstrate that is for the council's valuer to do some work and review that valuation, which will either confirm that the valuation from the prior year is still accurate, or indeed that there's been a movement either up or down that would need to be reflected in this year's accounts. So it's almost an ongoing process that the valuer keeps that valuation up to date each year.
That's just to say that they have to be revalued every year, basically.
Well, it has to be considered every year by the valuer. If in his professional opinion, the valuation from the prior year is still accurate, he would still need to do some work to demonstrate, firstly, to Anton, as the responsible officer, that the valuation is appropriate, and secondly, to us.
Is there any more questions? Now, you'll have to guide me here. Is that just to note that, or is that report going before the council? What's
just for this
meeting? So just note those. Okay, yeah. Thank you very much indeed. Cheers. Thank you. So we come now to second internal audit, which I believe is down.
Item 9.
So that's... So that's yours, I believe.
Thank you, Chair. What I propose for members is to kind of split this item into two. Obviously, there's the internal audit and the counter-fraud progress report. To help keep it perhaps less unwieldy is if I introduce the internal audit side, of which is a bit more than normal, and then invite any questions and comments. And then we can close that bit off and then move on to Jonathan with the counter-fraud side of things, just to perhaps keep the two separate bits a little bit more manageable, because it's quite a lengthy report this time around. From the internal audit side, on page... Well, I suppose it's a game of two halves, the internal audit report this time around. There's the usual updates as a result of the work we've done, the reassessments of the work required to be done. But there's also more detailed reporting linked to the independent review of our work and our arrangements done by the South West Audit Partnership against the professional standards that internal audit have to follow, which are the public sector internal audit standards. So I'll probably just take members briefly through both of those parts, highlighting some of the key areas, and obviously after that invite any questions or comments, views that members might have. In terms of the work completed, paragraph 4 on page 64 highlights that we've completed 3 reports to final stage since the previous committee. A summary of those audit findings are on page 70 onwards. and two reports on revenue budgeting and licensing have also been issued in draft. So that's part progress to delivery of the audit work by the end of the year. There's a table on page 69 that gives the position to the end of December. If I can just highlight to members the changes to the internal audit plan that we summarise, starting on page 64 with a bit of background, and provide the detail that's shown in the full page of page 65. I think probably just to give members comfort in terms of audit planning is an ongoing process, and for us to deliver a relevant and up-to-date audit plan to deliver our statutory obligations, but also to deliver the service for yourselves as a council, we're regularly looking at things and updating and reflecting. What I've hopefully done for members on paragraphs 9 and 10 on page 65 after the table is explain the reasons for the areas that we've decided to cancel for this year and the new areas of risk that have emerged where we feel we need to spend extra time. The second half of the audit report focuses on the review against the public sector internal audit standards. In your reporting pack, paragraph 12 is where that starts on page 66. There's a fair amount of detail in the appendix. There is the original report from South West Audit Partnership. But what we've tried to do, well, I suppose before I explain what the detailed table's all about, is the key aspect from a quality point of view is what's relayed in paragraph 13 towards the end of page 66, where the report concludes internal audit activity generally conforms to the public sector internal audit standards. In the footnote at the bottom, it highlights that generally conforms is the top of the three faint praise scale, shall we say, in terms of the rating that is awarded by auditors to auditors. I think it's just the way we never say things are well. We just think we've not found too much wrong. It's just the nature of the audit business. It is, but I think it is, and I think I've been an auditor for many years, and you just get used to that notation, those kind of words, really. But from a personal point of view, you're always going to find things that you need to improve on, and those are what are included on page 67 and page 68, both with the matter for consideration and the response that the head of internal audit has provided on behalf of Verito. I think my throat's not going to last too much longer, and I think I've covered the areas that I would wish to introduce to members. So if I can park my presentation, so to speak, now and invite any questions that anybody may have.
Is there any questions? Yes.
It might actually not be a relevant question. It might be an unanswerable question. But in terms of the things that have been changed because of the need of the incoming new chief executive to look at different things. Does that give you any issues at all, or is it just changing things that would have been looked at differently? Does that make sense?
I think so. If my reply doesn't make sense to you, please clarify as you feel. I mean, what we've done with in the table at the top of page 65, they're the first three lines of the three audits that have been cancelled. Because work is being done in those areas, so it felt duplicitous. But what we want to do, because it's still key areas for us to care about, have a view about, is to, once completed, review. As we've put in the second bullet towards the bottom of 65 in the bullet entitled Corporate Arrangements, we'll read, review the scope, the content, the findings to make a judgment on what is actually reported. So if we feel that the scope of that work is insufficient, or that if there is key findings coming out of that, then we need to be aware of that for our internal audit responsibilities. Also, it means that when we've had conversations with senior management, is there's an appetite at the moment for, once that process has happened, is for internal audit to be involved in potentially work in 19-20 in the next audit year. So we come with armed with knowledge and understanding and a kind of a appreciation of what the scope or involvement would be, as opposed to a can you give us a copy of those reports and what should we do kind of conversation. So an aspect of audit, especially at a place such as Rydell, where a number of health checks covering key internal control and governance areas have been undertaken. I was only happy from a professional point of view not to do that work if we could still have sight of it, appraise it, and offer a view and comment as and when they're completed.
Thank you. That qualifies. Yeah, I just this sense of stuff slipping between gaps, but it seems as though it's covered, so thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just to regard this table on page 65, it goes down, for instance, with health check, it goes 15 days to 0 days, but did I pick up that you'd already done some work, not necessarily on this one, but on some of the ones that have been cancelled? And does that affect how this table should be read?
We've started to have the conversation with Anton and with Stacey about the health checks to understand a little bit more of them. So we've started planning, but we've not received or reviewed any of them yet. So I suppose the work that's been done in the second to last row of the table is only just starting. And, I've got a meeting with Anton, I think, booked in for the week after next, but I was going to drop him an email today, but I thought I'd try and catch him at some point. We need to get sight of some of these to be able to progress that work. Some of them have not yet been completed, so we will wait for those to be completed.
Thank you, but I was thinking more in terms of the ones where the work's been cancelled. Had you started the work on the ones
Sorry. Apologies for misunderstanding. No, we hadn't started. The health and safety work was due for quarter three. The performance management and data quality work was due for quarter four. Just as an example on the performance management framework, we did some work that reported to officers about 18 months ago. So it was something really on our radar because it was very poor. And we could have in those planning conversations with Stacey and Anton and others and explain to them what we were going to do so that they're aware of that before or during the doing these health checks. So we hadn't spent any time on the work, but we'd had a conversation because we knew the work was we knew the work was up and coming. So I think we first, Anton, had a conversation towards the beginning of November where we started to understand emerging risks but also what work was planned. And so we had two or three iterations of conversation before earlier this month we finalised with that list of adjustments in that table. So we haven't spent any time on the work other than the usual ongoing dialogue and conversation.
Thank you.
Just an observation, I think more than a question, just delighted to see the NYCC collaboration in the plan, because I think that's something that as we go forward, the way things are moving with councils of this size, that is something that's going to become more and more important. So I'm delighted to see it's been picked up early by both this council and yourselves in terms of how important it is to this process.
Is there any other questions from anybody? Okay, thank you for that. Because we're doing it we'll do it as one piece. I'm with you. If you'd like to go on to the, counter-fraud part, please.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening. I'm here to update you on progress towards progressing counter-fraud work for the year thus far, up to the end of quarter three. I'd like to turn your attention to my report, which starts in your packs on page 85, but if you could turn to page 87, you'll get to the meat of the discussion, I think. To date, the counter-fraud team have produced £18,000 worth of savings for the council, and we're on track to meet our annual target, which is pleasing. 54% of our investigations have been successful. At the last session, I updated you on a project that was ongoing around business rates, data matching. We've received the matches and we've reviewed them, and we've not uncovered any fraud relating to business rate exemptions within the council, which I think should give councillors some reassurance that the scheme is well run and your business people are very honest. We've not found that in all the counties of North Yorkshire where we've run this. Council tax support remains the largest area of fraud that we detect. We've uncovered over £10,000 worth of fraud in this area. And in October, we uncovered a very serious case that led to a prosecution. Somebody, a lady from Weaverthorpe, misled the council for a number of years as to her circumstances and received funding, received discounts to her council tax that she was not entitled to. When we reviewed this case and discussed it with officers within Rydale, we determined that this was suitable for prosecution. This was a serious case. The lady was prosecuted. She pleaded guilty, and she was sentenced to 12 months of 50 hours of unpaid work over a 12-month period, which is a fairly standard sentence of this type. At the very, on page 89 and 90, we talk about some of the other work that we do for the council, and these tend to be around meeting statutory requirements. So we liaise with the Department for Work and Pensions, for example. We publish transparency data regularly to meet your obligations under legislation. We also take time to try and raise awareness of fraud within the council. The best way to prevent fraud is to have members of staff aware of it, looking for it, and stopping it at an early stage. That's all I'd like to highlight from my report, but I'm happy to take any questions that you might have.
Has anybody got any questions regarding that? Will, go on.
The balance between actually fraud and error, is it normal to find that the vast amount of this is actually fraud rather than error? Is that the sort of the norm?
When we discuss fraud and error, excuse me, it's hard to talk to you. When I say fraud, it's about whether we can prove something is fraudulent, and that's a very high bar. So when I describe fraud and error, that's three parts, I suppose. One is. People making genuine mistakes. They've made a mistake, they've been overpaid, and they've done that unknowingly. The second group are a group of people who have knowingly done it, but evidence can't be gathered to the point that I can say it's fraud. And the final group is the people who commit fraud who I can prove.
Understand that forever now, thank you.
Is any other questions? Okay, thank you. And that's, come on, David, what are you doing? That's unanimous. Okay, thank you. So then we come to, thank you very much indeed. If any of you gentlemen wish now to depart, do you need them for anything else?
You're going to stay for the next item,
aren't you? Yeah, just going to stay for the next item, okay, fine. So the next item is creeping in at the back of the back in the corner. Is
thank you, Chair.
Page 91, which is the internal audit plan consultation. Anton, are you going to start this off?
I'll start.
Yeah, so I'll start this and perhaps hand over to Stuart. This really is, it consists of a list of areas whereby we've had discussions about potential future work. So Stuart's audit programme in 2019-20, and it's just been brought here really to get some views on some of those areas. It's part of the consultation process, it's good practice. Ultimately, it's the internal auditor's plan in consultation with the council, but it's really just a list. Stuart, do you want to say any more to that?
Not too much, Anton. On page 95, I've tried to as succinctly and probably not as boring as it could be, regurgitated some of the statutory requirements and public sector internal audit standards by internal audit. But really, I think in that, it does expect that we consult with the board, and in that instance, the board is for yourselves. And it was something, first time we've done this report, so any feedback in addition to the potential areas for work on the scope and the content of the report, I'm happy to receive. The table on page 93 is not the be-all and end-all of anything that can or cannot be suggested. I just felt that it would be a useful prompt for thought and consideration rather than just a shorter report saying what do you think the risks are of the council that ourselves as auditors should consider. I think, just to put this into context, this is kind of the opening conversations by which you'll see the closing conversations at the next audit committee. We'll, in between those two dates, do a lot of work to prepare our risk assessment, which will involve meeting with senior officers, as well as ourselves assessing risks, new statutory obligations, emerging risks we find from our knowledge at other clients, both in North Yorkshire and more widely our networks, and so on and so on. We look back at what work's been done, and we, as part of those planning conversations with officers, ask questions around the quality of the controls, not just say, what do you want us to do this year? Because ultimately the quality of the work and the quality of the audits that we do is down to me and discharging the work that Max Thomas, as the head of internal audit, wants to do to comply with the public sector internal audit standards. So in brief, it's over to any suggestions of the risks that you are aware of that I can consider as part of the audit planning, and I'll take as many notes and, if needed be, listen back to the recordings so that I can take them all on board and go through them in the next couple of months when we do the plan.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, I suppose just to give sort of an external audit perspective on this, Chair, I think one thing that always works well with audit committees in terms of reviewing internal audit plans is that sort of sense check against the draft plan and the council's risk register, and is there a good map between the two? Because in theory, you know, all the council's key risks should be highlighted as the sort of red and amber risks on the risk register, and, you know, do they map back across to identify pieces of work in the internal audits plan? And I know obviously internal audit are on top of that, but I would just sort of flag that up as an area for members to consider in that discussion and review, that, you know, the key risks of the council are mapped across and are being covered.
Thank you. Is any comments from anybody? You were asked, I'm talking to members now, if you, when you came to the meeting, if you had anything. Added to the list as and when. Okay, is anybody, any comments to make?
Yeah, a couple of questions really. It seems, from someone that knows not a lot about audit, that this is a fairly comprehensive list of things. So is this in effect a list of all the things that you've looked at amongst other councils in the past, or is it something which is something that you see as possibilities from your work with this council or some other thing altogether?
I think it's a mix of the two. I mean, when we risk plan the audit, we've got lots of different, I suppose we call them entities, but the different areas of which we could do work on. So that could be a leisure services, or it could be a project management, or it could be something to do with members' expenses, or things to do with different parts of the organisation. Some could be corporate arrangements. So there are other things in theory I could have put in there, but I tried to keep it to a page. There will be consistency with both work risks that are relevant for yourselves and in other authorities. Sorry, just need to get a drink of water. Would you mind repeating the question? Sorry, my throat's gone. My mind's gone a little bit blank.
Sorry, my question was, is this list that you've got here, is this a list of things that you've done in lots of other organisations, or is it a list of things that you see specific to your contact with this organisation?
Yeah, I'd say it's more the latter. I've tried to, with some of the emerging areas on the corporate health checks and policies, procedures, the areas of performance management and data quality, use my knowledge to suggest things that weren't completely irrelevant to Rydale. But on some areas like ethics and organisational culture, it's emerging audit areas which we haven't done at too many councils before. With the IT ones in the other areas, as an organisation, Veritas is investing a lot of money and, I suppose, investment of time to train our IT auditors to be more conversant in ICT and audit areas. So some of those areas of security, we can offer slightly more techie or more focused work than we've been able to do in the past. So I think it's probably, as with Rydale, is I've tried to make it quite specific to Rydale, but there will be some in there where, you know, for instance, customer and ombudsman complaints, it isn't in there necessarily as something Rydale specific, but I'm part of my other roles is a audit manager for North Yorkshire County Council and dealing with social care and working with Anton with another hat on. And I know of ombudsman cases in that field that means that there's learning lessons for councils. It's just not necessarily a social care or a county council requirement. There might be things in some of Becky's areas to do with waste, or there could be things to do with planning that are equally as relevant coming out of your own customer complaints. And we haven't done that audit for a number of years. So it's one to just try and provoke thought and thinking, because some risks emerge for very different reasons. And we've obviously got enough to do probably 15 to 18 audits. So there'll be some areas we haven't done for a long time. So we're not as up to speed without asking the questions once a year.
And my other question on it is, are there some things in here that you think are very important to do, which, whether we think are relevant or not, you would recommend that we proceeded with?
I suppose it's a little bit of a double-edged sword in that, given this is a first engagement with anybody specifically talking about Rydale risks as part of the annual planning process, although we're having regular conversations, is it's like anything, you know more at the end of the process than you do at the beginning. But you know, I wouldn't have put things in like the corporate health checks or the North Yorkshire County Council collaboration I put them in knowing that, of course, we're looking at them at part of 18-19, but there's a potential for work to move into 19-20 as well. I don't know the SIPFA financial management standards. They, in some sense, are emanating out of the Northamptonshires and the financial risks that have been raised through there. They may not be less relevant, but from my point of view, having seen certain things, say, when you look at the main financial systems, revenue budgeting is something we looked at detail this year. I'm interested personally to look at capital budgeting, to see, ask questions of officers through that planning process. And payroll and personnel is something we're doing increased work in, as shown by the table in the adjustments to the plan. So that there's some of the areas where I'm already, without having those full conversations or appraised work that we're doing at other places have got a, I suppose in my mind, a proof to me we shouldn't be doing it kind of thought. And sometimes that's the good thing about the planning process. We're there to ask about the quality of offices arrangements, and I think gone are the days where internal audit just check if people are doing the job properly. If we can get enough assurance as part of the planning process that there's robust controls in place and being operated by officers, then we can use our focus on areas of more use or where we don't need to just check that people are doing things they should be doing. Because more often than not, the key areas we look at are key areas that Anton and Becky and other officers want to gain assurance are working and do so as part of the day job.
When I saw the earlier note that we asked, I mean, when I looked at this list first time through, especially this is headed possible work, and somebody's asking about things that I think should be there that aren't there, but I think my first reaction to that was, this is a list that's not going to be this long when you actually come to do the work. Yeah? So it was more about what don't you want to lose than it was about what you might want to add in, was the way I looked at it. And I think, to me, because of the way this is moving, I'm just going to come back to something you've said, the whole area of corporate health checks, of North Yorkshire County Council, of those sorts of relationships are things I wouldn't want to see as other than having those at the very forefront of making sure that we put in robust schemes in, because as those things develop, we're going to, you know, they may be a little bit new to us. So, I mean, that was the only point I would make. I take your point on capital budgeting as well, but I do recognise the fact that there are things on here that will just drop off. And as long as they're referred back to us in terms of this is the final plan, this is what we're going to do, then I'm very relaxed about it.
Just to add a different, the homelessness, which is the final bullet, it's there is new statutory obligations. When we discussed with officers this time last year, they were well aware of those new statutory obligations and very quickly were able to explain to me what they were, what their plans were to ensure that it would just become business as usual very quickly. So, you know, something like homelessness, I'm not expecting significant changes linked to the statute, but it might be that, again, I can't just rely on that year-old assessment. I just need to go back and do that. And it is something that is perhaps more significant at some of the councils I've been speaking to, mainly some of the metropolitan councils in West and South Yorkshire. So it shows that it wasn't on there for a risk, but we just need to refresh our understanding, really.
John?
Thanks, Jeff. Apologies to everybody for being late, but the planning inspector didn't seem to realise that I was supposed to be here having a meeting, and she allowed her meeting to go on beyond 5 o'clock. I'm very grateful, Stuart, to you for bringing this item to here, because I think it helps to close the circle a little bit as to how it all works round. And I've had an interesting route on one or two of the subjects you've got here, because about 2-3 years ago I was saying we need to have HR looked into, and last year I suspect that some of us had a little bit of influence on you that HR needed to be looked into, and then HR was on the list to be looked into, and along comes the new chief executive, and HR, the logic of that, falls off your list. And I think the one thing that I would advise that maybe you ought to be cautious of here is with the new chief executive finding out what the new chief executive is finding out, that your working with her has got to be particularly close, because some of the things that she is introducing now and are happening now will need audit in a year's time, rather than looking at what she's doing as she's doing them at this point. That's sort of one concern. And I'll keep hopping from subject to subject and back again to try and fit in with. On the list of areas, that is incredibly useful. But one that my eyes alighted on and then stopped and thought, I'm not sure whether that covers it, and that's policy framework, about 5 down from the top. And this committee sort of stumbled across the fact earlier this year that we have a climate change policy that is reviewed every 4 years, and somehow we haven't looked at it since November 2007, I believe. Now, that's not quite any 4 years in even the dodgiest of auditors' calculations. And that's raised the thought that I have for this job. Is there a case of somehow auditing what policies the council has, and whether or not, if there should be an annual review, if there is an annual review, and if there is an annual review, where does it go and what happens to it, etc. Now, I have no idea how big a piece of work that would be, and if it's massive, maybe in the present turmoil it shouldn't be done. On the other hand, if we're trying to make a clean start in a lot of areas, then maybe it is something that is worth a look through and over. But and thank you very much for meeting with me the other day with officers present to look through things, because I think that is a good practice to have. So coming up to the end of 2 years of chairing this committee, I'm beginning to get to understand how it works, and it's most helpful what you're doing. Through you, Chair. Thank you, Stuart.
Thank you, John.
Stuart, any comments in relation to that policy one?
just a minute. I'll take yours first and then go back.
I was just going to say, Chair, just building on what Councillor Clark has said there, certainly in a number of the audit committees that I sit on in the NHS, they have umpteen policies for everything. And a lot of them, without this sounding a bit like, yes, Minister, they have a policy on the policies. And almost they have a lot of the big teaching hospitals will have a database of all their policies and a reminder that comes up a few months beforehand that, you know, this policy is ready for review in a few months' time. And it's to try and prevent the situation that Councillor Clark just mentioned there, that the policies that need reviewing annually or every 2 years or whatever, that there is a reminder to do that. So, I mean, forgive me, I'm not as familiar, you know, whether that's in place at this council at the minute, but there will be a register somewhere, I'm sure, of all the policies that this council has and how frequently they are required to be reviewed and possibly updated. And it might be just some way of potentially, you know, having a spreadsheet of them all that issues a reminder to the relevant lead officer that this policy needs updating in the next 3 months. And it's almost like a red flag to flash up that's done. And I've seen it done quite successfully in the NHS, Chair.
Stuart?
The only thing I would suggest, reply to John, is that to me is something that I'll take up as part of the planning process. The arrangements, I suppose, at times we end up looking at individual policies when we do individual pieces of work, but that kind of overall, what the corporate arrangements are in place, which we just touched on, we could do part, I suppose, substantive in sense of testing where the council's at, but before that, I'd be interested to understand what their arrangements themselves are to keep on top of things, of emerging things, of other things. And a little bit like the HR side of things, there'll be sickness, absence, whatever, the suite of HR-based ones, which link to your previous point, could be a separate piece of work. It could be part of an overall corporate arrangements policy review piece of work, but it's certainly something that I'll raise with relevant officers as part of the planning process. Thank you.
Will, do you want to say something?
Thank you, Chair. Just to say that just with that one example we had on the climate change, we don't know at this point whether or not there is a system as you've just described and the system didn't work, or there isn't a system. And that shouldn't be a long piece of work to get at least a start on it and then put it into your decision-making processes as to what you're doing next year. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, just an observation on the same thing, and it's great to hear you. I'm going to use different words to yours, too, because I can't remember yours. I wish I could, but I can't. I think this is... No, not your words, John. I think it is this sense. It's really good to get the vibe that's coming from this sense of helping to create a situation that says this is how we do things around here, and this is the template that it all fits into, and when we've got that in place, then what we can constantly do is audit against it, yeah, so that we are checking the checking, if you like, and it's really coming from a big company process driven background. That's just, I think, where we want to be. So that's good. Thank you.
Any more comments, suggestions, or otherwise? Okay, thank you very much, everybody.
Page 97. Thank you. So this is a short report and also an appendix, and it does two things, really. Firstly, it identifies and lists the progress that's been made in the past few months against the key issues that we identified in the annual governance statement. The annual governance statement is, as it suggests, it's done once a year. It's approved around about the same time as the accounts are approved. And in there, it sets out how we carry out our governance within the council. But key part of this, and it also fits in with the risk register and indeed the internal audit plan, you'll see that links between all these things. It suggests those issues that we think are key need to be tackled in the forthcoming financial year. Those are identified in the appendix, those key issues. I'm not going to go through them in great detail at the moment. Happy to take any questions on them. But hopefully you'll be aware of most of these. So speaking kind of my area, that you're aware that we did identify a key issue was around the budget and around budget monitoring and the way that information is going out to members. And we have taken some steps. We're not there yet, but we're on a journey to improve things. So there's a number of areas, and with that kind of update for each. I said there were two points to this. The second point really is I have to be careful of not over personalising it, but it's in 3.2 of the report, and you'll see there. One of my bugbears is that the annual governance statement has traditionally been seen, and it's not unusual for this council, it's traditionally seen as something that the finance people do. And that's not right. It should be a responsibility right across the council. So we are taking steps to review how that's happening in terms of, and we are where we are for this year, but we are planning to have a more involved process in bringing that about for the new one, and we'll do that and bring that to you, obviously, firstly in draft form and then for approval in July usually, but also we'll bring you an update as we've done here, but we'll probably bring it a little bit earlier, sort of halfway through the year. So it's not just purely personal. I think it's good practice. And actually speaking to my colleagues, it is something that they feel that they should have ownership for. So that's really it in terms of the annual governance statement. I'm happy to take any questions.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I apologise, Anton, for this. I have tried to get hold of you in the last 24 hours and failed miserably yesterday and haven't been able to talk outside North Yorkshire today. And I would have raised this, therefore, before or in the pre-meeting. There is a phrase in the governance statement and in your report of a recent staff survey indicating bully of employees. That needs a date in it of February 2017, I would have thought, because the more recent staff survey is not published, etc., and so on. And that leads on to the brought forward item, the results of the recent staff survey, and it wants that changing for the same date in it as well. And it says the chief executive and members. Now, I don't know, I think somebody's altered the computer for the annual governance statement, because that, I think, would have said either overview and scrutiny or members, but not the chief executive, because we were between chief executives and the chief executive and all employees were not involved, deliberately not involved, because they may have been caught up in it in some way, and I don't want to say any more publicly than that. But if we could have those two bits, and it is absolutely wonderful, as far as I'm concerned, that the annual governance statement is looked at as what I believed it should be, and that is an annual governance statement, and not a issue that was related purely to finance. And if you're going to look into that and how it works, that would be absolutely brilliant.
Thank you, John.
Yeah, I am going to surprise John now and agree completely with him, Anton. It is, to me, this sense of this is how we do things around here starts with the annual governance statement. So I think the linking of that into what else we're doing really becomes the driver for where this council's going in the future. So it's a really important point you make, and delighted to hear that fellow officers are embracing that approach, because that's what will take us somewhere.
Any more comments or questions? No?
Okay. Noted with amendments, though, Chair.
So, apologies, this is that you will have been sent in recent days. Yeah. It's not deliberately too small that you can't read it, I promise you. There's a lot of information on here. Again, just as a bit of introduction, this is another area, and there is a pattern here, isn't there? This is another area where we are reviewing how we do this and to make it a meaningful ongoing action plan. Now, there's always a temptation that risk registers become a statement, again, that you do once a year, you then file it, and, you know. And risk registers, again, I mean, there's probably a battle between agenda items about what is the most interesting or not. Risk registers are never the most interesting thing that we have to look at. But generally, I think there's a correlation between interesting and important, or least interesting and important, and this is really important stuff. We've done a lot of work on this over the past few months. We had a workshop back in October with Verito, where we basically started again with our risk register. We also had some member training that was delivered by Zurich in December, I think it was. And this is all part of a process of reviewing, refreshing, and almost restarting. What you've got very much is a work in progress. Apologies that it is a work in progress, but frankly, it's becoming it is a big exercise, and we just need to do it. And as is I think the way
we now operate. It's about keeping you informed of where we've got to at this stage, even where it's not finished. So it is as it is. We have highlighted earlier, following that workshop and to this committee, we've highlighted the type of risks that we were going to put in this register. The way this works, there are three, if you've got the colour versions, you'll see there are three colours, three columns. The first, which is all in red, and you might expect it, is saying this is the risk if we had, if we did nothing. If we did nothing in this area to ameliorate that risk, it would be red. It would rank as red for us. The middle colour is where we think we are now, and we're setting out the causes of the risk because that helps us deal with it, the consequences, and what controls that we may have, whether they're proactive or reactive controls that we have in place at the moment. But the most important thing, really, they are the next two columns, showing A, where we think we will get to after we've carried out further mitigating actions. And sometimes there will always be a risk. Sometimes you won't. The risk will always remain yellow or amber. But without those mitigating actions, it could be worse. So it is what it is. There's a lot of information in there, and we'll be pleased to get feedback either this evening or elsewhere. I would hope. And John, I've not spoken to you about this, but I'd hope that we have another scrutiny committee meeting in 3 weeks' time, that we're able to bring another version of this to that meeting, time permitting, to have a look at that at this committee.
I think, Anton, that it's not a question of if, it's a question we've just got to make time for it to be on there.
Thank you. Yeah.
And I need time to digest, and I guess some others do by the fact they've been handed out tonight.
Yeah.
And then we give you feedback for you to bring it back at that point. Yes. And, you know, with a bit of luck, you may be able to get it, you know, slightly more exciting than it's been so far. You never know.
Yes. Sorry, I need to inject a bit of excitement.
And I apologise for missing Treasury management. That was the one thing on the journey here that was concerning me.
Happy to have a private session on that.
Has anybody, apart from that, has anybody any comments? Di?
My comment is, yes, I agree with John. I think we need time to look at this. I think I should congratulate Anton because I have to do these for work and they run to pages and pages and pages. So this is not dull in comparison to the ones I do at work.
And I should say again, this is not a finance exercise, and some people, Becky in particular, been very involved in this, to her delight.
Anybody else? Sorry. Is there a current risk score for the final? The only one of these items that hasn't got a current risk colour is the last one. Is that intentional?
Horizon scanning on the current, because we haven't quite worked out what it is. We know what it would be if we did nothing. We know where we want to get to, but in terms of where we are at the moment, we're having some discussions around that. So that's the straight answer. We just haven't agreed.
Will?
I just want to make an observation, if I can, Chair. I think that's the most enlightening piece of paper I've seen in 4 years on this council. Thank you, Anton. The fact that that is produced says a huge thing about where this council's going.
I mean, thanks, Chair. I think I just make the point. I think, you know, it's great that this is, you know, I know it's work in progress, but that it's come to this committee tonight, that, you know, the committee can review and comment on it. We mentioned in our audit plan that, you know, the risk management arrangements was something that we were going to focus on as part of our VFM review, Chair. And again, I just sort of drawn some experiences, again, not necessarily in the local government sector, but in the NHS sector. the review of the risk register by the audit committee is a standing item every quarter, and it's very much seen as an iterative process, and there'll be typically a covering sheet that shows the risks that have been added to since the last meeting, the risks that have dropped off and the reasons why that change has taken place. So these are things, I mean, we'll talk to Anton on this as our work develops. The other things around, sort of from the members' point of view, I think I touched on it before, are these the type of things that potentially keep you awake at night about this council, having that in the back of your mind? Are these the sort of key risks that you feel you've got at Rydale? And also things around risk appetite. There's certain risks that, you as a council may just be comfortable in effect, taking on because you've got an appetite, the risk appetite of the council is that, you think you've got enough mitigations in place and will kind of live with that risk. So these are some of the discussions that I'm sure we'll have as our sort of value for money work develops and we liaise with, not just with Anton, as I say, with other key officers, Becky, with the chief exec as our audit work develops. But there was just a few thoughts for now, Chair.
Thank you for that. Anybody else wish to add to the comments, etc.? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Just a short presentation from me on this item. It is a report that is scheduled to come to this committee every year. And the intention is to provide details of any use of covert surveillance under the REPA Act, Regulation of Investigatory Powers. And it's really to note that there's been no applications for such surveillance and no requests to Magistrates Court to approve anything under this item. And just to add, actually, that on the 17th of January, senior officers did actually attend training on REPA just to keep us up to date with the requirements of this Act. If there are any questions, I will. I do know there's colleagues in the room who can give some advice, and if there's further more detailed responses required, I'll arrange to get them for you. So happy to take any questions if there are any.
Ed?
Yeah, I think I'm right in saying that there hasn't been anything brought up under this for 7 years. Is that have I read it right? Yeah. What sort of things have been brought up in the past prior to that? It was before my time. Are you aware?
I'm sorry, no, I'm not aware. I'd have to come back to you on that. I don't know if anyone else can help in regards what might come under this sort of thing, just to help.
It's before my time as well, actually. But surveillance is, used to observe and detect crime, but there's a very high bar for it to be used. Prior to 2012, I think, councils could just decide to do it without reference to magistrates, and I believe that since then it's a lot more strict in the usage of it, and there's a lot less of it happens. I certainly know from my team across North Yorkshire, we use it very rarely, and only in the most serious of cases.
Thank you for that. The reason that I ask is that I have some concerns about the level of surveillance that we potentially are under anyway. Although this might come up every year, I don't actually remember looking at it, so I don't know if I just happened not to be here. But there are obviously, you're most surely aware of, stories about councils using this for monitoring people through and rubbish away and ill-using car parks and whatever, which doesn't seem like a reasonable way of using the process. But I'm reassured by your statement. Thank you.
Just a quick thing. After 2010 to 2012, There's limits on when you can use RIPA, and it has to be an offence that carries a minimum sentence of at least 6 months. So I think in the past it maybe was used for inconsequential crimes, but now there's a much higher bar in place.
Is anybody else any comments or questions on that? Okay, so we just dealt that again, I guess.
All right, thank you, Chair. For members who are aware of the are involved in the climate change scrutiny review, Joss Holmes has been the lead officer on this particular review, and she's the author of this report. And the key things really to pick out tonight are that the task group met in January and discuss various things, and on 8.2 the point that I do want to just pick up on is the discussion around setting up an environmental forum, an environment forum at the council, and it's been agreed that an informal meeting will be held, and the date for that is the 20th of February, and further details will be shared when we have that. And then the next and anticipated to be the last task group is scheduled for Thursday the 28th of February, and where external advisers will be invited to that meeting to contribute to the review, and it's hoped that following that the task group will be able to consider draft recommendations, which will then come to overview and scrutiny on the 21st of March. I don't know if members, particularly John, want to add to what I've just said, but that's really the purpose for the report this evening, just to alert you to those dates and the plan for the review.
I have no comments to make. Have you? No, nobody else has any comments to make. Okay. Thank you.
Chair, there is just one that occurs. That for the environmental forum that used to be a great success, that must not become another job for the council to do. And it is a question of anybody who knows any environmental organisations or whatever to tell them that that is when it is. We might have a circulation list that gets produced that somebody here can be just send it out as one mass email when we know what it is. But there isn't the resources to do any work on it. So if anybody knows anybody who's involved with an environment group anywhere, tell them the 20th of March. It'll be on the website when I get round to talking to Di, and Di does the website and we hand it in as an advert, etc. But it has got to be done a good chunk by word of mouth of the environmental groups out there. So people's help would be appreciated. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Any other comments to make? Okay, thanks very much indeed. So the final item is just a ONS committee work plan, which is the last item in the package. There's just one item. The last item which you brought up is that it's not KPMG as the reporting officers at the bottom. It's, we've changed our auditors since then. So. But otherwise, that's the programme that's been laid out. I don't think there's anything that you want to add to that, is there?
Could I just mention that there may need to be an amendment subject to the agreement with the Chair to move an item which is scheduled for the February committee, which is the Safer Rydale progress with delivering the community safety plan. It's suggested that the information we'll need to have that ready will mean that that report will need moving to the March committee.
If that is a request to the chair, he'd be delighted to accept it.
Thank you.
But can we replace it with the risk register?
Well, if there's no other comments... Oh, sorry, there is. Sorry, on that item, sorry, there's no other comments on that item. Sorry, yes. Now we come to any other business. You want to say something, yes?
It was just a plug, Chair, for the Audit Committee event for members at Grant Thornton. So hopefully members should have received an email about that for Tuesday the 26th of February. It was circulated, hopefully. It's just for members, not for officers. It's something we're doing for all our new Yorkshire clients. The look of look from yourself, Chair, suggests that you may not have received that email.
But the rest of the members should have got an email invitation.
I think certain members from Rydale have already signed up to it, I believe. We'll do another circularisation of the email. It's in our offices, Tuesday 26th of February, Leeds, next 2 minutes' walk from the train station. There's a map on it and everything else. And as I say, you'll be the opportunity to network with other members from our other local government clients that we've taken on this year, Chair, and there's a network lunch after it and all that type of thing. So it was just to mention that, but we will send an email around again.
Thank you for that. Okay, cheers.
It's about a two-hour session, so within that there's a sort of mini session, so I'll do one around our value for money conclusion work. Talene's going to do a session around some of the key account risks, like the valuation of land and buildings. We'll probably finish about 12:30, 12:45, and then we've got an hour or so buffet lunch, and you'll be able to network with other elected members from our other new clients. So we do Leeds City, Rotherham, Doncaster, Barnsley, North York Moors National Park, the two police forces in West and South Yorkshire. So There's a fairly diverse group of local authorities that we've taken over from KPMG, and we thought it'd be useful for you to all sort of meet up, and we'll go through sort of our thoughts on how an effective audit committee operates.
John?
Thank you, Chair. You said other people in Rydale. I think I was told, rather than got an email coming to, but as we're not emailed, that wouldn't tell you anything. You said other people from Rydale. Do we know who else was invited? Because I was told it was chairs only, which is why probably Jeff doesn't know about it, and I'd be delighted if Jeff could go.
We've billed it for chairs and members. So, I mean, Talena will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Talena got the email addresses of all members except for yourself, Councillor Clark, from Will. So we were led to believe that those email that they'd been sent an emailed invitation, and I think we posted yours, Councillor Clark.
Yeah,
so
I've had the invite, but I thought it was that. If it's not and it's everybody, then yes, please.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's everybody, and we got the email addresses from the audit committee. There's all the members' email addresses, and it was sent, I think, this side of before Christmas.
We'll get that sent round in the next week or so, Chair. But as I say, it's Tuesday 26th of Feb. But we'll resend those.
Is there any other business? You have. Oh, Becky has more business. One moment, please.
Well, it was just something that the Chair and I spoke about previously. It was just to mention that in the minutes, it was decided at the last meeting that a revised set of performance targets would come to this meeting, and it was just to say out loud the reason it's not come to this meeting is because of the health check. but the report will be coming to the committee when that work's done, so it hasn't been forgotten. Just didn't want to do the work twice. Okay.
Do I assume from that I'm going to be facetious now? Is that that just shows how efficient you are? Yes, okay. And on.
It just shows that over nearly 2 years trying to get the performance figures to make sense, I've failed. I don't think it shows anything else.
On,